Hello everybody and welcome back to Discerning Consciousness. I'm your host Ant-Man and once again I'm joined by our resident shamanic practitioner Heather Heaton.
Hello Ant.
It's good to have you here again. And today we're on to our next part of the serialisation of the teachings of the Celestine Prophecy. Today is part four, in which we'll be discussing the seventh insight, which is called Engaging the Flow, and also the eighth insight, which is called the Interpersonal Ethic. Sounds very interesting.
Yeah.
just for our listeners, obviously, who've been following the series, Heather, we'll just give them a brief resume of the different parts and different insights we've already covered. So part one of this serialisation of the teachings of the Celestine Prophecy was the introduction where we just discussed some of the background behind the book and how it's published, which was quite interesting. And the first and second insights. The first insight is all about synchronicity, and the second insight is called The Longer Now.
Can I just say that also the first insight is can also be named critical mass.
Right.
So critical mass obviously is about how more and more people understand this deeper knowledge.
Yeah.
And as more and more people understand the deeper knowledge, so their lifestyle changes, thinking changes, and therefore society changes.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to critical mass, enough people that it moves forward.
Kind of switches over.
Well, it's like the domino effect then, yeah. Yes.
So, yeah, thank you for that.
That's right. And the longer now, it's saying that people no longer preoccupied with material survival.
Mm-hmm.
And that, therefore, is understanding that they're going through a process from the whole of human society is going through a process from, you can look back 1,000 years.
Mm.
And that it isn't that this is here and now and this is what it's all about. We're actually like a cog in the wheel.
Sure.
The here and now is the cog in the wheel.
Yeah.
So we're part of a process. And if we take responsibility that we're part of a process, rather than it's about me, it's about my life and it's about now, then society will move forward into, shall I say, a higher vibration.
Yeah.
Existence. And, you know, instead of being stuck in the heavy duty materialism.
Sure. So just moving on, part two. We discussed the third and fourth insight, so just quickly reminding our listeners, the third insight is called A Matter of Energy, and the fourth insight we covered is called How Humans Compete for Energy.
Yeah, and I'll come in again there and say that seeing fields of energy, if people have gone through the process and tried it out, they would have gone out into nature.
Mm.
And of course, this is a small part of the chapter.
Yeah.
They would go out into energy, sit into energy, go out into nature, sit in nature, concentrate on seeing if they can see the aura of other living things like the plants and the trees,
yeah,
and work on that ability. Until they can see maybe energies and colour in the energies. And I say this because what we're going to talk about today has a direct relationship
between that.
Yeah. So that helps the people listening understand where we're going to on today's insights.
Okay.
The fourth insight, a struggle for power,
yeah,
how humans compete for energy. And it goes on about stealing energy by control methods. And of course, that sounds a bit dramatic.
Mm.
It sounds a bit dramatic, but what we don't understand that we do interplay with each other.
Yeah.
And while we see it on a psychological or a physical or a social dynamical level, there's an underlying energy interplay going, and that's what it's talking about.
And perhaps the reason why we don't recognise it is because that's just considered normal life. That's how we interact with people.
Well, I think that we take more notice about what we can physically see.
Yeah, sure.
And how bad the emotions might feel for us when it's not working for us.
Yeah.
And completely overlook that there is an underlying energy dynamic, as in quantum physics.
Mm.
It's, you know, it's physics. It's not woo-woo, it's physics.
Yeah.
And that's what that one's referring to, which again, there is a connection with one of the insights that we'll be going over today. Okay. So I'd like to bring people's attention to that as well.
Thank you for sharing that with our listeners. So okay. The last part of the serialisation of the teachings of Celestine Prophecy before today's episode was part three, in which we covered the fifth and sixth insight. So the fifth insight is called the message of the mystics, and the sixth insight is called clearing the path.
Great, shall I do another?
Yeah, praise
little it. Explanation. Please little please explanation. The message of the mystics. Ah, gosh, that is a weird one.
Mm-hmm.
It's suggesting that you can have moments in life and time, or you can do the practices, if you can follow the instructions and do the practices over time, to have an experience where you shift from understanding yourself only in the three-dimensional experience, the physical experience, to a sudden expansive experience. And literally, your concept of who and where you are has expanded out into the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a concept of that. People do have that experience. You know, you'll find Buddhist people will have that experience, have been years of in the training to get to that place.
It's known as the mystical experience.
The mystical experience. So it's saying that once people understand that they are not just human beings on this earth doing a material physical work life, that they are actually part of the universe in their consciousness, that it shifts you to a greater truth of yourself and of existence. And the sixth insight, clearing the past, the human evolution through a synergy of both mother and father's impressions. And that comes to the adage or the saying that's come from the Knights Templars, which is man know thyself.
Yeah.
And we will be going into that. And we will also be going into that using Ant here as an example of his life, which he's graciously
we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, giving us permission to do that, to give an example so people can understand what that strange process is.
Okay, thank you again for sharing that. So I think we'll crack on now with today's part four, the teachings of the Celestine Prophecy, in which we're going to cover the seventh and eighth insight. So if it's okay with you, Heather, we'll start just with some notes from the book.
Yes.
We'll share those with our listeners, and then what we'll do is, so it doesn't get too boring for our listeners, we'll then share our take on, you know, what this particular teaching or insight, I should say, is trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah, do that. That's a good idea. So these are shortened versions, aren't they,
yeah,
of what's in the book, either in the storyline
or
in the
guides.
Experiential book of the teaching, yes.
Yeah. So I just read a part for our listeners. So this is a brief description of the seventh insight, okay, obviously, which we've described as, it's described as engaging the flow. So this is being systematic in the way you build your energy. Focus on the environment around you. Remember what everything looks like when being filled with energy. Recall the presence everything displays, the unique beauty and shape everything has, especially plants and what they display, and the colours seem to glow and appear brighter. Experience that feeling of closeness. Everything seems to be, no matter how far it is away from you. Feel you can touch it, connect it, and most importantly, breathe it in. And just this last section I'm going to read is, when we visualise that each breath pulls energy into us and fills us like a balloon, we actually become more energised and feel much lighter and more buoyant. After breathing in the energy, check to see you have the right emotion, love. It is the true measure of being really connected.
Okay, would it be a good idea, I think, for you and I to just put it into everyday words?
Layman's terms.
That
would be helpful for me.
that we would get and understand.
Sure.
Because I think, particularly, that I think we've both discovered in this chapter that it's not really in layman's terms all the time.
No.
And so I think it can be misunderstood, as in people can think, what on earth are they talking about, and go past it. So if we can go with, it might make more sense to people, it might not, but we'd give it a go.
And also, as we described before, the higher insights, obviously they're the more, the process of human evolution reaching its kind of final stage. And as we know, we're not quite there yet as a species. So no. That's why we need to try and explain it in a way that people can grasp.
And this era, we're responsible for this stage happening, this evolution happening for the next generations.
Sure.
So we're playing our part, but we must do it in order for the next generations to be able to flow on through.
Okay.
So that's why
I'll
it's important.
Pass it over to you for now.
Thank you. Okay, we've got a useful checklist, haven't we?
Yeah.
To follow.
Yeah.
And it's given in a systematic way, which it's therefore, if you follow that system, it's possible to experience energies of yourself feeling and enjoying a heightened spiritual experience. Okay.
So we try to explain the sense in which you can actually experience, or the listeners can experience, this idea of engaging the flow for themselves.
Absolutely. I know loads of people have experienced it, but there's a lot more who would like to experience it, I think, and there are those who haven't heard about it, but having heard about it, they would be curious. So it is something everybody can do, but you do need to follow this checklist to be able to go through the, put your whole self, your mind, body and spirit through the stages to go through. And really, that's what the Celestine Prophecy is all about, the whole process. I'd like to say that one of the processes that it gives is about the type of food that you eat. I almost feel that there are different schools of thought on how you eat and what type of food you eat makes a difference to your vibrations, your energy.
Yeah.
So I think everybody must figure that out for themselves. Mm. But it does go into specifics in the book.
Yeah.
So do read it, understand it, but know that there are also other schools of thought.
Yeah, sure.
On the types
that's
of food.
That's a balanced perspective to bring.
So. Yes, while we're talking about chewing, we're talking about not eating, not talking. Mm.
One of my
favourite
words, mastication.
Trust you.
Yes.
There you are. We did everything to avoid that, folks. And this young man here decided he was going to make us all wake up for a moment. What was that he said? If you've ever seen 2 and a Half Men on television, there is such an episode. Right. But of course, it is about organically grown food.
Mm-hmm.
It's food that you've created, and simply put together food as well.
Mm.
And also the nutritional balances.
Mm.
So there's, I have a lot of friends that know a lot about that. I'm afraid I don't know a lot about it. But that is emphasised here. But, people listening and people reading the books need to figure out what that means to them particularly. Okay. The other thing to talk about was how, do you remember we said when we were in the introduction there, we talked about people sitting in nature?
Yeah.
Yeah. But to go and sit in nature, to do this process, you need to have already achieved that.
Right.
Because this list suggests that not only do you take notice of the food that you're eating and how you eat it, but you also remember what it's like. Recall very powerfully within you what it was like sitting in nature and seeing the energies of the plants. So that's the next process.
So what you're referring to, obviously, is part two, where we spoke about the third insight, a matter of energy. So if people want to remind themselves of that process of sitting in nature, then they can listen back to that.
Absolutely.
Episode.
And it says to at this point, to bring your focus onto that vision and to bring it back to your complete awareness. And that this should bring about a sense that everything around you has a personable closeness. You're not detached from all of nature, of the physical world or anything. The barrier of the separateness goes away.
So rather than just say walking through a forest and oh, that tree looks nice, that pretty, you know, all that pretty fern there is actually where you're immersing yourself in the energies of nature.
Totally connected. Yeah. So your consciousness expands to be that close. So you could almost feel that you could reach out and touch anything that's at a distance.
Mm.
Because, and it's all in your conscious awareness. That's what's happening, your conscious awareness. That's very... I would like to emphasise that what we're going through at the moment is actually quite idealistic way to go about this.
Sure.
And that it might not suit everybody's lifestyle.
Especially with the pressures that people are under in terms of work, economics, finance,
children, mortgage.
It just isn't, in a lot of instances, it just isn't feasible.
Illnesses.
Not feasible.
Sometimes, but you know what, we were talking about it earlier, Ant and I, and we were saying, but we know for a fact that if you read through or understand it, you can take things from it to make adjustments for yourself,
even
so you can
just,
go forward.
Just aspects of it.
Absolutely. I've done that, you've done that, haven't you?
Mm.
We can all do that, but it also takes us forward. It does take us forward, so it's worth doing.
Yeah.
Okay, the next one is by the breath. Now, you know, in all esoteric, alternative, holistic practices, always the breath.
Begins with the breath.
Always begins with the breath, because if you don't breathe, what happens?
Mm.
Within minutes. And I always remember learning in yoga that you can go so much time without water, so much time without food. So you're talking hours, you're talking days.
Mm-hmm.
Breathing is the other third thing for life force to go through you. It's minutes. So the breath is number one.
Mm.
And that's why they bring it in here, obviously, very powerfully. And by using the breath, it's important then to visualize you're drawing the life force from the universe.
Mm.
It's a practice that I use in teaching meditation, in any type of meditation, any type of concentration, or beginning to go into a deeper journey, as in shamanic journeying of any type, psychic work, to start off with the breath and to use the breath, drawing it in from the universe. And I found that a great deal of teachers now are using this method for the start of meditation, healing, anything. It's becoming pandemic in its usage now.
Dramatic it's, word.
Yes. Oh, I had to put that word in. I learnt it yesterday. It's my word of the week. But to visualise that you're drawing from the centre of the universe and you're drawing with the breath, and use the breath like bellows, little demonstration, and draw and fill yourself up with what you can envisage as a light energy, a light, bright light force, and feel that you're filling up with it and filling up with it. And you can actually do it like filling up your body, or you can go on to continue to fill up your aura, if that works for you.
Yeah.
But by doing that, and don't be afraid to do the deep breathing, but be sat down or laid down, in, out, and breathe down to your belly, and breathe out quite powerfully. Continue to do this, and you should at some point feel a lighter, higher sensation. So that brings you that life force into your body and lifts your energy system. Is that okay?
Yeah, that makes perfect
okay.
sense. Yeah.
Good, all right, that's...
Yeah.
So the breath is very important with the other things. I think then we're going on to the emotions, aren't
we? Yeah, because obviously the emotion of love is an important part of engaging the flow and the evolution of human consciousness. And obviously in the book explains that basically in the West we have a very, how should we say, a misinterpretation of what love is, basically. So shall I just briefly...
Would you do that?
Read some,
and then we'll
yeah.
have a we'll put our own input in afterwards. Yeah.
So some notes from the book are: love is not an intellectual concept or a moral imperative or anything else. It is a background emotion that exists when one is connected to the energy available in the universe, which the book describes as the energy of God. We'll explain what we mean by that in a while. Thoughts feel different when you connect with the energy. The words you have habitually wheeled through your head in an attempt to logically control events. Stop when you give up your control, drama. As you fill up with energy, other kinds of thoughts enter your mind from a higher part of yourself. These are your intuitions. They feel different. They just appear in the background of your mind, sometimes in a kind of daydream or mini vision. They just come to you. They just come to direct you, to guide you.
Yeah. The emotion of love. I didn't come on this journey of discovering the teachings in the alternative and the holistic with understanding what love was. Yes, background baggage, absolutely. So it's been a quest for me to discover what other people, when they were oozing lots of love and felt love for everything. And I struggled with that. But I learned as time went on that the love that we're talking about isn't the in love.
No, not the romantic love.
It isn't the in love. It isn't that. So I've learned to describe it differently. I describe it as a greater harmony, a feeling of greater harmony. And that if you are living with a feeling of greater harmony, that is a real benevolent energy oozing from you. And I believe, and I always remember at school, we had a divinity teacher who tried to give us...
You had a divinity teacher?
It was called divinity.
Did you go to a school of theology or
Well, it was all about teaching us about religion. It was all about the Bible, and it was called divinity. I go back that far, Ant, and that's the problem. That's gone into the annals of history, but that's what we called it. So he pulled everybody out in front of the class who had a jumper or cardigan on that was of the school colours uniform, all green. And there were about 15 kids out front there, and they all had a green jumper or cardigan on. But not one of them were the same. Every shade of green you could imagine. He said, this is what we call love. We call that green. But they're all different colours, really. And he said, love is the same. There's so many differences, but we only have one word for it in our language. I believe there are other languages that do that word better. More explanations, different types. Like certain countries have a whole load of names for snow, whereas we only have one word for snow. And that's what I found was the problem with understanding love, or the emotional side of evolving and connecting with all. So it's this great sacred flow you're looking for, this great sacred flow that is a greater harmony and peace with inside yourself. Then that oozes beyond you in your energy system and your actions and what you do. That then automatically, when you have that type of expression oozing from you in every part of you, your thinking, your feeling, your actions, it automatically changes your thought processes. And this is what it's talking about. When you have that going on to you, that's the next stage that you need to take on to go to this higher vibration, to this higher, to go to this higher understanding of existence, the ones that we're going through right now. When you have this greater, this adjusted thought process, I should say, it then starts to eliminate your own natural control dramas. And didn't quite say that right. The control dramas that were spoken about in the insight number four.
Yeah, which is in part two of the serialization.
Yes, that's right. In our part two, insight number four is the struggle for power. That's us competing for energy again. Well, once you are in that stage of greater harmony and balance and warmth, you don't no longer have any need to compete. Even when you don't know you're doing it, you don't do it when you have this. So that's what the love and emotion is about. I just wanted to add in there, when For instance, the book talks about God, and other people will understand the deity of God within this process. I'd like to just add that we would like to refer to that omnipresent as the divine, because there are other versions and other titles for such a divinity. So as not to offend other people, we just like to refer to it as the divinity.
Just to keep it general, really.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, the word God can be taken to mean many different things by different people, and it can be misinterpreted, because you can use it in some contexts and people will think, well, you're religious, not spiritual. So we want to avoid those misunderstandings.
Yes, because it's beyond that.
Yeah.
It's beyond that, and we understand. So God's okay for some people, goddess for others, and a whole range of names and titles beyond that. That's absolutely fine for us. But we'll just call it this umbrella title of the divine.
So I wonder what we'll move on now, Heather. We've spoken at length about the on the first checklist, which is about building energy. We've done that through talking about breath work, and we've just spoken about, you know, unconditional love, really, haven't we? That's what we've been speaking about.
Yes.
So if it's okay with you, what I'll do is I'll just basically run through the other points or the other checklists, and then we can speak about them at greater length.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a good idea.
The second checkpoint is about remembering your basic life questions. Okay. Number three is having a consideration of your immediate questions that are currently confronting you in life. The next point on the checklist is having some sort of intuitive sense about what to do or the actions to take in your life, okay, or having a hunch. The next thing is about the importance of identifying the right questions to ask about your path in life, because then obviously you should hopefully get the right answers. But first of all, it's important to ask the right questions. And then lastly, by doing that, hopefully, if you remain alert and watchful and follow the synchronistic flow, then that will further take you forward on your destiny path. So really, before we were talking, as I say, more about the feeling aspect in terms of the energy, the breathing, the aspect of love. Now we're talking more about psychology. So now, aren't we?
Absolutely, yes. Because we're going back to the previous insight, which was a clearing the past number six insight,
part three, yeah,
which is actually dealing with baggage.
Yeah.
And it's understanding what baggage is, where it comes from, how to identify it, and then what to do
with
it.
So there's a link between, as I just said on the next point on a checklist, about remembering your basic life questions and baggage.
Yeah. And that's in this explanation.
Okay.
Yeah,
thank
sure.
You.
Right. It's saying if you're going to build your energy, what will scupper that? What will stop that is dragging behind with you baggage from the past.
Yeah.
So it's identifying an answer. So it's remaining aware of your basic life questions that came from your parent, the expression of your parents' life, what life they had. The crux of that is what did your mother not achieve that you think she might like to have done?
Yeah.
Or showed signs of maybe she could have done, but she didn't.
Yeah.
And the same for your father. What areas of your life did your father seem to have wanted to have achieved or been successful in or experienced that he didn't seem to be able to, because certain things in life created stumbling blocks for each of them. And we're going to lean on a very common one this time. Sometimes there's a person who, by the time he gets into the family situation, he or she then always dreams of the day they're going to do that thing they always wanted to do, and always the family came first.
Yeah.
So they might have had a little foray into it. They might have had they might have talked about it a great deal.
Might have been some great project that they've had that's never come to fruition. It normally comes to the fore in the midlife crisis, of course, and it's a theme beautifully explored in the film American Beauty, when he goes out and gets the big red sports car, he starts lusting after his daughter's friend. Yeah.
Yeah,
and it's that idea.
And of course, that would be the man who has turning around on desires rather than finding what his path is telling what him his, that he would really enjoy
well, that
being.
That would have been the more rooted approach.
Yeah, well, and what this teaches.
So am
sure.
I right in thinking then, Heather, what we're talking about here is how we can take forward our parents' unlived legacy or their legacy?
Yeah, definitely this. There was something I was going to say and I forgot, and I hope I come back to it. Excuse me, folks. I'm going, this is the point at which Ant has willingly said, okay, use me. So we're going to use his example just to make
this
clearer.
Yeah.
So let's just start off with the first bit. When you went over the Celestine prophecies before, you came to a realization at some point what it was that your father and your mother would have done with their lives had they not been bless them. I'm trying to think of the right words. I want to say sacrifice, but that's not so good. But what they would have become had they stayed single, shall we say, or had the wherewithal, the whatever
it
took.
Had they not followed the path of what that mainstream society and their parental expectations, cultural expectations had set for them and many billions of other people?
Well, yes, but also giving time tension for family needs.
Yeah, sure.
So what can I ask you, what you came to the conclusion that happened to your father? Can you tell us what your father was, as in his main profession?
So when my father was in the 1950s, so when he was a teenager, that's when his passion for photography first started. And His specialism really was taking street scenes of people in London. And
can I say that he didn't do any of this for a living, did he?
No. This was
This
was his passion. Mm. Yeah, he did. His paid employment. He did go. It was kind of like photography, but not. He was a planner plate maker, which is actually where before computers came on board, where all magazines and books, it all had to be created literally by hand, if you like. The page had to be laid out, and he would take the photos, and he would create the actual printing plates to do all of that, to produce all of that.
Great.
So he did follow his interest in photography, but not in a direct route as such. Does that make sense? He never became a professional photographer, but I think the point that you're alluding to was, you know, his photography of that period especially was amazing. The images that he took, the photos that he took, and I remember 10 years ago when I put them on a website, the comments that I had were amazing. Dozens of comments, people saying, "Who is this chap? Did he become a professional photographer?" Because my friend put them up and said these were photos taken by my dad when he was around about 15, 16 in the late 1950s, and people were saying, These images are amazing, you know.
So had he felt that he could have been what he would have thought less responsible for his family, he would have taken a chance on being a photographer.
Well, he would have been a professional photographer. Probably
and
would
he
have
would
been
have been
a name.
Good.
He would have been up there with the Baileys, and you know.
Yes, yes. So. But there were things stopped him.
Responsibilities.
So, yes, absolutely. Can we switch to your mother now, and can you identify something in that line with your mother, your mother's life? Can we say that the aunt's father has passed a while ago, and his mother's fit and well?
She is, yes. With my mum, one of her skills that's never really found an opening, shall we say, in a career path, is with words and the English language. I can remember, you know, me, my siblings and myself when we were growing up. My mum, when she was helping us with English homework or writing in general, or, you know, those awkward job applications where it's about finding the right words and about putting them in the right kind of order, she'd always just instinctively know the right, and still does to this day, knows the right kind of words to use. And those people are, you've got that skill as well, have I to say.
I have to say so have you, but we know where you get yours from.
Yeah, sure.
Your mother.
So it's that skill of knowing what words to use, and just, yeah, having that almost sixth sense, I would call it, without necessarily being grammatically trained. Although I think I never was at school. I've kind of like, I just have an intuitive sense of what reads well and doesn't. Whereas I think my mum's generation, they were actually schooled in the proper use of English and the construction of English.
Yes. Yeah. Would you say that you have a love for the English language?
Yes, I do, yeah.
I'd have to say that I have seen some of Ant's writing in the past.
Not enough.
Not enough.
No.
I have seen some of his writing in the past, and his skill for writing is amazing. It's really brilliant. So, for me, I believe that his mum would have done very, very well writing a book, being an author,
absolutely,
had life allowed her.
Or a copywriter or editing or something like that, yeah.
But very fulfilling for her, as your father would have done photography.
Yeah.
So if we look at you having a legacy from your past, from your parents, I'm going to come and explain this a bit more in a minute. If you'd had that from your parents, would it have been possible that you would have seen yourself following a certain career if you'd taken that, as in the photography, the creative, and having the eye for that from your father, and having the ability for the English language from your mother? Where would that have taken you, do you think?
I think, quite clearly, is a career in journalism.
Exactly, because the point I'm making, that really comes to journalism, and the minute you realised this, what did that make you feel for you?
For me?
That think that you could go out there and be a journalist. You could go out with your camera, you could go out with and by the way, folks, I do know that he has a passion for research. So all of that coming together suggests that if you got out there to be the journalist, you'd always been a happy bunny, wouldn't you?
Yes, yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
Well, I'd be doing what I'm here to do, bearing in mind the legacy of my parents, and something that I think will be important for our listeners to pick up on. When I realised, I should say, that legacy that had been left for me to take forward, it really helped to heal my relationship with my parents.
Well, this is what I was going to come to, was how could that be baggage? How could that be baggage holding you up? But I'm going to say that I have come to me as clients, people from 40 to 55, coming to me, sitting on my settee and saying, I'm really confused. I know I'm supposed to be doing something out there in the world. I know I am. And I'm going round and round trying to find it. And in the end, they become quite demented.
It is a horrible feeling.
They're saying, I know it's silly, but it's driving me mad. And I can't seem to go forward. And I seem to be, sometimes I'm getting depressed. Sometimes I'm just confused. And nobody seems to understand me. And this is where you find out. This is from the Celestine Prophecy, from this understanding, number 6, clearing the past, dealing with your baggage, is when you start to identify. Because what happens up until then, I'm just going to explain to the listeners that I happen to know that Ant followed a completely different career. And I'm only going to say very discreetly that it didn't do your health any good, did it?
No.
His health suffered a great deal because he was following the career that wasn't resonating on a healthy vibration for him, shall we say. So that's where it's baggage. And this is why we're talking about clearing the baggage from the past. It's getting to know yourself. And once you step into that, do you mind me saying that, Aunt?
No, it's fine.
Aunt, no. Does that make sense to what happened to you? Would you like to say any more about what happened to you?
I mean, yeah, in a way, as I said before, it was a really the understanding that I had about the legacy was, as I said before, it was healing. It wasn't one of those, you know, where the scales fall from your eyes and you realise, oh, actually, I can be a little bit more understanding of the faults and foibles, shall we say, of my parents, because, you know, maybe I even had some sort of pre-life agreement with them or something.
Wow.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Then. You know, who knows? And it does, in a very sort of parochial way, you can say that you can cut your parents a little bit more slack, because I know many people have difficult relationships with our parents, because we expect so much, and perhaps rightly so. At the end of the day, they do bring us into this world, and it's this idea of the legacy. It creates that connection back and forward, and that, you know, that's an important aspect.
Can you explain what you mean back and forward?
Well, there's a concept I'm sure you're aware of within shamanism, which says that, you know, in this lifetime, especially in this time, we have the capacity to heal our lineage backwards and forwards. And
they say seven generations both ways. Yes. Yeah, both ways. Yeah. The more you look into, shall we say, quantum physics and the understanding of the holistic and everything this teaches, that begins to make sense.
Mm.
It really does. So yes, it can be healing all around. I totally agree with that. Do you feel that the revelations made a difference to you, where you are today and where you see you're going?
Definitely, because now it's when I suffer struggles and, you know, trials and go through hard times, at least now I know I'm on this path towards, you know, where I want to get to, towards expressing and giving full expression to who I am. Whereas when I didn't have that awareness, it was much easier to, you know, let the saboteur and the negative voice win, do you know what I mean? Whereas at least when I'm going through hard times, like we all do periodically, there's a context. It's like, well, at least I know I'm actually heading in the right direction.
Yeah, and there are some people that are able to find themselves walking in the direction where they pick up the slack from their parents, I would call it, from whatever their parents didn't achieve that would have liked to have done, and then they go forward with it in balance unconsciously, and it works for them. Most of us have to stop and take a look consciously, and it's always at the, and I'm always saying, if it doesn't need fixing, don't fix it. But if anybody gets to that point where they've just feel that something's not right, they feel they go around in circles or decreasing circles, or they get a sense that something's not working right for them because they feel like working in the wrong direction, that's when you work this particular teaching. Work this, and what happens then is you get a growing awareness that we might call intuition. And when this happened to you, you first had to take hold of recognizing what happened to your parents, recognizing that you weren't on that path where you could be, and that being on that path, taking up the slack from your parents and taking their, what would have been their ambition forward, that was exciting for you, because you really felt, oh my gosh, I really would like to do that.
It's who and what
you,
I am.
You recognized it as who you are. And this happens for most of us, should we want to find out. Do we get to that point of frustration or confusion or despondency or even depression? This is the thing to do.
And then, just to add to what you're saying, to a point you made earlier about clients that come and see you and their anger and frustration, really is they must have this sense in which I'm not doing what I need to do. I'm not giving, as I said before, free and full expression to my uniqueness and my skills and talents. And it can literally drive you mad, and it can destroy you.
Everybody comes and says, I feel I need to do something out there in the world to make a difference. Everybody says that. It's everybody who comes to me when they're at that stuck place and they don't understand this teaching, or they hadn't come across this teaching. Everybody has a sense that whatever they're going to do, that it's going to be part of the world, and no matter how small or how big, it's going to make a difference somehow, somewhere. Isn't that interesting? I promise you, everybody has the same sense.
The teachings of the Celestine Prophecy, what they're saying is more and more people are going to feel that. More and more people are feeling that urgency or that disquiet in their life, and it might play out in their personal life, in the fact that, you know, more and more relationships seem to be breaking down because people will not tolerate or bear what is not, you know, in harmony with their true self.
So, absolutely.
You know, society and culture says, oh, look at all these crises in religion and politics and economics and relationships. We really, it's because, you know, we're living now in a time where hopefully, you know, people are not going to, they're not able to bear situations where it's just not who they are.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, this is what we, if everybody was in that place, I don't know that we could even imagine how harmonious that world would be.
No, exactly. It's hard to imagine.
That would be a completely different expression to society. And we're not quite in a place where we would imagine that actually being.
Sure.
It also is asking for anybody doing this process that you need to get to a place when you recognise what your parents have left you as that legacy, you then need to ask yourself, okay, where am I at this time?
Yeah.
What am I doing
so
at this time?
So the nitty-gritty.
How? Yeah, so this is the, I think you had a sentence for that there, didn't you?
Yeah, about how center yourself in your power by discovering the immediate smaller questions that currently confront you in life.
That's the one.
Yeah.
The smaller question is, okay, so what is it I'm doing?
What is my life? Yeah.
Where am I? How am I supposed to change this? What am I doing here? Where am I supposed to be going? Mm. Those sorts of things. So then seeing the longer picture, then coming down to the immediate now, and then say, okay, so what am I doing? And I just want to reflect on you without saying too much about your own personal world, saying, I remember at that stage you stopped and went, my God, I'm totally in the wrong direction. I'm in the wrong career. Do you remember? And that is what you find out. You find out if you are going in partly the wrong direction, completely the wrong direction, and all of a sudden there's this sort of awareness comes across you. Once you get that awareness, oh my goodness, I'm in the wrong place, I'm in the wrong direction, in fact I need to aim towards there, a whole load of synchronicities start to fall in front of you, should you want to take notice of them.
The importance to say, share to our listeners, they have to be recognised, because it can be quite subtle, not right in your face. You know?
Well, you have to be open and willing to watch and wait and see if it is a message for you, whatever it is.
And dispense with your cynicism, which I quite... hard.
If you're open, you won't be cynical. You won't be cynicism. You won't be cynical.
Yeah.
If you're open, so at that point, it's a matter of being open and trying things. Try see what you can do and be open to possible people coming up and saying something to you out of the blue. Like, oh my God, why did you say that? Because I was just thinking about doing that.
A piece of information you've been, you know, about a job opportunity might just come about. You might go to a social event and you just meet someone you've never met before, and they put you in, you know, in connection with someone else, and you know, who knows what.
And something, sometimes something hits you on the internet, or in a book,
or you might be taken to a certain page and it's exactly what you need, those sort of types of things,
or on holiday. But there's and sometimes something in a song hits you, even as silly as that it can be, but that's a subtle one. And if you're used to picking up on the synchronistic messages that come towards you, then things, they can come through songs and what have you, but they do take you forward. Whereas when you're stuck in who you're not, the synchronistic messages are really not there.
Yeah.
No, but it definitely happens. And again, I want to say to our listeners, this is physics. It really is quantum mechanics, it's quantum physics, this really happens. This is what engaging the flow is. You then engage into the flow. This really does happen. Also, what happens is you might also have flashes of thought, flashes of awareness, and sometimes people bringing information to you that they don't have to, and they do out of the blue, literally out of the blue, things drop to you. And it might not happen immediately, it might not happen in a rush, it might be a bit spread out, but if you are open and observant, you will see them. And my suggestion is you try them out, because people say, but how do you know it is? Try it out. Mm. As long as it's not inviting you to jump off the Dover cliffs, then, you know, maybe you've got an abseil down them, yeah. And maybe that's your journey. Who knows? And so you join an abseiling, please. Mm. Don't do it off your own back. But it literally is trying things out, because as you try things out, also more synchronistic messages come to you. So they'll bring you back or divert you on or take you on that direction. Follow it. And this is what engaging the flow is.
Can I just add a point? Because some people might be listening and saying, well, that's all very well, but I have a life full of responsibilities. I'm in a job that I couldn't possibly give up because I've reached a level of salary that if I have to retrain, you know, I would have to give up and start again. So for quite a lot of people, you know, in the Western world, they maybe don't or they don't perceive that they have that option of, you know, making different decisions, because their life is pretty set, you know.
Well, this would come into life coaching or mentoring.
Yeah.
Very much so. So I'm just going to give a clue here that if you suddenly realise, oh my goodness, I should have become a portrait artist for some reason to do with your parents, or I should run a gallery because I'm more business minding and I'm getting that from one of my parents as well as the artistic side from another. And I should have done that, but I have to find funding.
Yeah.
Then you start by researching.
Yeah.
On the internet, which is all. And if you want to know more about certain styles of art, there are books. There are books. And begin with that, because if you're stepping into that arena, in even if it's toe dipping, you are signalling your matrix, your flow, your intention to go forward, and then it starts triggering off other doors opening. But they might not be big doors, like you said.
It's a bit like a circuit board, yeah.
It does. It does work like that. But you've got to go for it openly to enable it to happen. If you go forward closed, like, well, I don't think I really believe this, so I'll just sit here and wait.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be silly. Then you'll be blinding yourself with your consciousness, your conscious awareness, to certain opportunities. But I'm not saying that you fall sillily, like I say, or like jump off of the Dover cliffs. But I'm saying to watch, open and be aware and try these things out. And then you learn about it bit by bit, responsibly.
Okay.
I'm not talking about being stupidly irresponsible.
No one wants to give up on all their responsibilities and run away. As tempting as it might be for them, because that's pretty irresponsible.
And sometimes you can join groups upon online. Sometimes you can go to clubs. Maybe you can go to an evening class. But it does start the process going. And I will say, you found this, haven't you? Because you had to stick to your work and your income. But little by little, you're finding a way where you can begin to shift it. And there is a way you're going forward where you are saying to yourself, well, I'm going to do this in my spare time, but I'm going to do it with what I can fit into my spare time, aren't you?
Yeah.
That's just to help listeners understand.
I'm just aware of the time, Heather.
Sure.
Running a bit of short time on this particular insight, so we've got another one to fit in. So I wonder if we could just work towards rounding up our discussion.
Well, I think we've said all that we can on that. So there's certain things that you have to do in a stage by stage by stage, and to move forward with that for stepping your whole self up into a different vibration, and that is engaging the flow. And those synchronicities come in the flow. Do you think that winds it up enough for everybody to understand?
As we always say on these, on the breakdown of the Celestine, please do refer to the books and the teaching guides for more information.
There are more details, many more details of all of these chapters, in the book.
Yeah.
We do advise people source the books.
Hopefully our words are bringing some form of inspiration for you to go off and do more research, and you know, we encourage you to do that. So, right, I think we'll move on now to the eighth insight, which is called, grand title, The Interpersonal Ethic. So just to give our listeners some sort of background as to what that might mean, shall I read some notes?
Would you? Yeah. Please, yes.
Okay. So this relates to children, okay, this particular aspect. Don't talk about children as if they aren't there. Speak to them directly. It is about how humans will eventually learn to relate to each other and how to project energy to others and how to avoid addictions to people. The eighth insight speaks about using energy in a new way when relating to people in general, but it begins at the beginning with children. We should view them as they really are, as endpoints in evolution that leads us forward. Very profound words. But in order to learn to evolve, the need to our energy, we need to have our energy on a constant basis, unconditionally, or need to give it, I should say. The worst thing that can be done to children is to drain their energy whilst connecting with them. And just lastly, this is what creates control dramas, what we've spoken about in the past, in them. These learned manipulations on the child's part can be avoided if the adults give them all the energy they need, no matter what the situation. That is why they should always be included in conversing, especially conversations about them.
Unconditionally. So I think the byword here is unconditionally, so it's all unconditional. Mm. What they're referring to is the control dramas that we've spoken about before from the earlier insights.
Yeah.
If there's control dramas going on in the family setting, then the children will have a reaction to that.
Yes, they will.
And their reaction is moving into a control drama.
Themselves, yeah.
Yes. And of course, what we know is it's this unseen,
yeah,
and below psychology, yeah, quantum physics energy into play.
Yeah.
And what we need to do, it says, is to give the energy to children rather than them feel that they've got to demand it or to get into a strop because they're not getting it, or get right into a sulk because they're not getting it.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right. So any of the children in a family, therefore it's suggesting that whenever they need attention, whenever they need, yeah, a conversation, a communication, they need a question answered,
yeah,
then it's important to give that attention to them, mm, and to converse with them, particularly, mm, in a very sensible way,
mm,
or even in a mature way. Mm. Very important to, mm, set in that mature, calm, strong communication right from the beginning.
Yeah.
It's understood that if they get that, they don't get into control dramas, sure, themselves,
yeah,
at all. So that is us taking responsibility for future generations,
yeah,
because then they don't pass on that need for control dramas. There is some information in the Celestine Eighth's insight,
yeah,
that talks about having a whole bunch of children in one family.
Yeah.
Maybe that can cause control dramas,
mm,
for the children to grow up with.
Mm.
I think people have to read through this and maybe make up their own mind what they feel about that. I think that there's different ethos, different, mm, understanding. And I also think there's a difference depending on what country,
mm,
that children are brought up in.
Mm.
Because there are some countries where families are big, and that they are poor, shall I say, they have very little, and so there does become a feeling of going without or being restricted.
Well, in certain countries or cultures in the world, having lots of children really is almost a necessity in terms of survival.
Yes.
You know, it's not like it's just the difference between life and death.
Yes, it is. So although this instruction could be an accurate one,
mm,
it might not seem complementary to
or applicable
parents that are in another country with other situation and difficulties. I think in the Western world, we've learned a lot about giving children the attention when they need it and speaking to them in a very straightforward way, no ambiguity. And it does emphasise, don't give them fantasy for answers, like the tooth fairy. Although the tooth fairy is okay when they're 2 years old, or 3 years old. But please, it says, please teach them the difference between fantasy and reality. So talking with them, answering their questions has to be straightforward, mature speak to them. When you play with them and encourage them to use their imagination, that is in playtime. And therefore they know the difference. So there apparently there is an anxiety of interspersing the two when they're toddlers and then they're a little bit older than toddlers, and to give them answers that are not relevant to the truth. I'm going to say that I remember talk about how you answer questions to children, small children that are asking about, like, where did that kitten come from, mummy?
Where did my brother or sister come from?
Yes, yes. But I know in the Western world, we really do, I think, have this advanced awareness that we bring forth, which is that baby came from the tummy of the mother. And then when the child asks, okay, so how did it get there in the first place? The teaching is asking you not to make up some fantasy answer to make the adults feel comfortable. Stalks, gooseberry bushes, various things. To actually say it came from a seed and that the seed was planted by the daddy. It is suggested that you say this. And when my grandchild was growing up, after having known this knowledge, and she would ask me, right, where does that sort of thing come from? And so you start straightforward, like this teacher's here. Okay, this came from, you came from your mummy's tummy. How did I get in my tummy? You grew from a seed. Where did the seed come from, Nana? And then you say, Daddy put the seed in there. And then you're just preparing yourself for something that's going to be more awkward than ever. And they go, oh, right, okay.
This comes back to me, well, I always knew why Daddy was interested in gardening, planting.
Well, that's a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
No, the answer is that you get back from that child is, oh, did you see where my toy dog went? Yeah. Or did you see where my bicycle went? Oh, I've left my bike. Completely bored with the rest of the talk.
Yeah.
I was taught that a child will only ask and listen to as much as it can take. The rest it just turns away from. Not interested.
Yeah.
So you work to the child's level of absorption of knowledge.
Yeah.
And you speak to them maturely. And I found it worked wonders with my granddaughter. I wish I'd known that when my daughter was small. I didn't. So that's very, very helpful. But it enables them to be talked to in a respectful way and enables them to go forward without confusing fantasy and reality. And it's very helpful for this to be done. I feel that, as I said, the Western world really does have quite a strong take on that now, which I feel that maybe when the book was written, the explanation of that teaching was written in a way where the Western world didn't have quite the grasp
on
it
en
masse.
On a little bit.
Already we've moved on. Don't you like the sound of that? Mm-hmm. That's very, very good. Yes. Mm. So it's always tell the children the truth.
Yeah.
Always tell them the truth and always let them know that when fantasy comes into it, you're purposely making up stories for the purpose of entertainment. And fun. That makes sense. I will bring in then, if anybody has any doubts or any queries on that, please watch Super Nanny. Anybody seen the programme on TV of Super Nanny?
You mean Joe Frost.
Yeah, Joe Frost. This is what she teaches
all the
time.
She's done it
in
the States and here in the UK.
Big time in the States, yes. Not so much here. She comes back every so often. But you can see in front of your eyes watching the filming of how this teaching works tremendously. She's got a wonderful way of speaking face to face to children, no matter what age they are, and keeping them with the truth. And that she has to teach parents how to do this who have lost the plot on it, shall we say. So yeah, that very important. I do recommend that program hugely. I'm sorry, I was just going to say, I've heard some parents say, oh, I thought you only watched that program if your children are hyper troublesome. And it isn't. It's a revelation on child psychology and human beings in general.
And I can say that I've seen Heather do this with a friend of hers her friend's child firsthand, and the results were just amazing to witness.
That's what they want. That's what the children want. So you can get confused with what children need. And
I wonder if we can just, before we go on to the second aspect of the eighth insight about addictions to people, I just wonder if we can just reiterate to our listeners why the Celestine obviously is placing so much importance about this evolution of how we relate to children. But how I see it is, of course, it's because, well, the children are the future generations, and the Celestine prophecy is about how human consciousness is going to evolve, hopefully, into the future. So that's why, just to bring a bit of context about why we're talking about how adults relate to children.
Yeah, could you say that again, explain it a bit more?
The reason why the Celestine has a whole insight pretty much devoted to how adults relate to children and the control drama aspect of that is because obviously children are going, if you like, they're going to birth the evolution of human consciousness, the future generations, when us oldies die out.
Yes.
You know, so that's why it's obviously important about that's why it's important to understand how we can change the way in which we relate to them.
Yes, of course, and the thing is that it's actually thought that this time is one of the most important times for this revolution, shall we say, because the whole of the earth, as well as human society throughout the world, is going through a complete change, transformation.
Mm.
We're going stage by stage, and of course that transformation is going to come through the following generations. Mm.
Yeah.
And that's why it's really important to be aware that the children now are taking this forward, and we have a responsibility on how we help those children take it forward. So instead of nations dropping bombs on each other, shall we say, or shall we say rich countries deciding not to take responsibility for the heating of the planet through their industry, I'll name no names, and to opt out of taking care of that, it will be the future generations will take responsibility.
Because they're going to be the future corporate and political.
Yeah, they will leaders. Help evolving change come about in the corporate world, in the manufacturing world. They will, and the more balanced they are, the better they'll do it, and the better they'll cooperate with each other, for sure. Yeah, they're definitely cooperating.
Can I just check, was there anything else you wanted to add about the aspect of how adults relate to children?
Yeah, one more thing I suddenly realised I didn't say was that if children aren't getting the attention they need, and I'm not saying giving them sweets when they're having a tantrum, not saying, oh, I said no to you, but I'll say yes to you now because therefore I'm giving you attention. Mm. Literally, attention is speaking the truth to them, which means sometimes, no, you can't have that, but I'm telling you face to face. I'm telling you calmly, and I'm telling you eye to eye in a mature way that we are not going out today because actually we have other things to do. For instance, you have to do your homework. So, but this is talking truth and this is being with them, but it's giving them the attention to tell them face to face in a mature way.
Rather than just dismissing them.
Rather than shouting and dismissing, because when that happens, or if the parent is doing something that is keeping attention away from children when they're asking questions, when they're feeling emotional, when they're playing up. If you're not giving the attention they need, as in telling them the rights and wrongs, or listening to their question and understanding the trauma they might be in, if you're not doing that for some reason, for instance, if you're dealing with a whole bunch of children, it's getting difficult to deal with one that's having a meltdown.
Yeah.
If you're on your phone, if you're taking attention because you're working too many hours and you can't be doing that. If they're not getting the adult, and it can be extended family, it can be a good nursery, it can be good teachers, but as long as they're getting that adult attention, then they cease to compete for energy. They grow up, if they don't get that and they're frustrated and angry, you see a reaction as they grow up.
Sure.
Now, you will see a reaction out in society, when they're in society, when they're in their world in society. You might see a psychological reaction. You won't see the energy play that's going on, but that's the underlying force. Under it all is the energy play. So the child is competing for energy from somebody. From somebody, rather than being able to draw it from source as they might have been taught by the adults. Do you understand what I mean?
I do, yes.
So they will be competing. And I just want to add to that and saying, from myself, I've got a big beef about competition. I feel that competition comes from a fight for energy. And that I always remember being taught a long time ago that our societies, in plural, all of them, should be striving towards and helping each other strive towards their magnificence, as I call it, rather than competing against. And even when somebody says, I guess a little bit of competition is healthy, I was saying from myself, I disagree, because competition is competition. Let's not flower it up. Striving towards is what brings people to success. Competing against is division. And now we understand from the 17 prophecies, competition comes from a struggle,
lack.
A struggle to gain energy that we feel we haven't got. Thank you for letting me stand on my orange box and say
box.
That. So, it's a soapbox, is it?
I was
being healthy, food-minded. Okay.
So the second aspect we're going to cover briefly, because we're running a little bit short of time, is second aspect of the eighth insight is called addictions to people. Can I, again, we seem to, this format works quite well. Shall I just read some basic notes from the text?
But I will just pop something in then. And the, after going over this, I real addiction to, okay, that's a fair enough descriptive word, but we in the Western world actually know it as dependency or codependency. So if people could keep that in mind when they're reading it, they'll see it, I think, as we understand it these days.
Okay,
in this
so I'll just share this for our listeners. The idea of an addiction, as used in the manuscript, explains why power struggles arise in romantic relationships. We've always wondered what causes the bliss and euphoria of love to end so suddenly, which turns into conflict, and now we know. It is a result of the flow of energy between the individuals involved. When love first happens, the two individuals are giving each other energy unconsciously, and both people feel buoyant and elated. That's the incredible high we call being in love. Unfortunately, once they expect this feeling to come from the other person, they cut themselves off from the energies of the universe and begin to rely even more on the energy from each other. Only now there doesn't seem to be enough energy, and so they stop giving each other energy and fall back into their control dramas, which are very important, in an attempt to control each other and force the other's energy their way.
Yes, and bit by bit there is a deterioration goes about when each other hold back from giving. Again, it's that underlying unseen quantum physic energy that you give to each other, and it pulls back. And we all know what it's like to have that sense, that feeling, that moment, that period of time when we fall in love. We all do it, and it's the most, I mean, they say in the center, if you've got that, if you're giving somebody that energy, that lifts them and they feel lighter, they feel energized, they feel valuable. Can you remember having that feeling when you fall in love?
I think once, yeah. I don't give any details to bore our listeners. But yeah, it's an amazing, because someone is, it's that unconditionality. So they just, it's that full self-acceptance. Whereas as we know, with all our other dealings with people at work, our friends, our family. There's always that conditionality whereby, you know, we're not fully accepted. Where you fall in love, as they say, with this person, they just initially accept, initially at least, they accept all your little foibles and other aspects of your behaviour that other people pick you up on all the time. Mm-hmm. They love you for the entirety of who you are. And that's why it feels so delicious also, because in sort of modern culture, the way advertising works and all the rest of it, we find it difficult to accept ourselves, don't we?
Yes.
Our physicality, our, you know, many different aspects of ourselves, and you have this one person completely accept you. That's why it feels so amazing. It's like, oh, I'm human. It's that it's confirming your humanness. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Mm. And your value. I think they confirm your value. Mm. And the most devastating thing is when they withdraw it.
And it starts, but it's only a gradual thing, isn't
it? It tends to be a gradual. It starts nitpicking, isn't it? Mm. And then bit by
bit, it
goes to, yes, it grows and it grows and it grows. And that's the gradual withdrawal of energy coming from each other. So the teaching is how to learn how not to be dependent on somebody else's energy system and somebody else's acceptance of you. Mm. And it's the weirdest thing. I think it's very, very hard to do. It takes a time and practice to be able to become acceptance of yourself, so that rather than needing energy from somebody else, you draw the energy from the universe and you learn to grow in acceptance and belief of your own value.
I think you've alluded to an important point. I mean, I don't personally know many people that are in that state of consciousness. I mean, I think that, you know, yogis are, certain types of mystics and certain, you know, genuine teachers are. But, you know, for the rest
and
of us...
And Simon Cowell.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, Simon. Was that rude? Yes.
For the rest of us, it is a bit of a struggle to reach that point. And, you know, we might not make it in this incarnation because it really... You know, it's very flattering when someone's firing a lot of energy at you. It is.
But you will always be go looking for what you're missing out on or what you feel you're missing out on. And that has a direct result of what happened to you as you grow up.
Yeah.
So whatever control drama impressed upon you as you were growing up, that's what you go looking to fulfill.
You're imprinted on the way.
Yes, because you only feel half full if you haven't had the full acceptance, recognition and boost of energy and valued in your growing up. If there'd been something missing, then part of you is missing. Mm. And you go looking for fulfilling that in a partner as in an adult. Mm. So you're looking for the counterbalance of you. Mm. Once you find that person where you feel that that person's the counterbalance, then they need to fill you up with energy to make you feel good. Because you've not learned to draw that from the universe, shall we say, from source, fill yourself up with it and feel totally balanced. Mm. If you get to a place of learning total balance... Well, shall we say, maybe not at a stage of perfection, because I don't believe there is any such thing, but you get to a type of balance that works, then if you come across somebody who is in a need to fill up half of them because they feel unfulfilled, then you tend not to stay around too long.
But you're not going to magnetise those types of people to you, are you?
Well, they come through you because if somebody who's balanced is a very attractive prospect.
Sure, yeah.
So they will come along, but the person that's balanced should have a sense that this isn't going to work very quickly.
Before they get involved, hopefully.
But they do have a sense of who else is balanced, shall we say. Yeah. So they am. So codependencies can go away when you've learnt to balance yourself. So... learning to balance yourself has got to do with the shall we say, if you're a girl, if you're a woman, a girl, I'm thinking myself as a girl again, that's nice.
We'll give you that.
Thank you, forgive me. But if you're a female, then it's rather been helpful having that input from your father so that it's balanced your male-femaleness, so that you have the balance of male-female with you. If you've had, and if you're a boy or a man, then you might have had the nurturing aspect from your mother, so that you've learned to be the male within you, shall we say, or the yang aspect of you, but you've been nurtured with the yin, the yin being the more feminine. So I'm actually also alluding to whether we're also talking to people that are the gay people or the homosexual people. Yeah. It makes absolutely no difference. It's about having the male-female balance within you, and then meeting up with whoever you need to meet up to have. But also if it's a family of children where it's same-sex parents, it's still talking about the balances.
Yeah.
That makes absolutely difference.
Which can be achieved in the same way in gay relationships.
And homosexual, absolutely, makes no difference. It is about the balances. And they can be achieved or they can be lacking just the same. It makes no difference at all. And that's what it's about. It's about if you have not had that filling on both sides aspects of yourself from your parents, then you will be lacking. If you're, like I said, if you're a boy and you've not had the nurturing from the feminine side of the parents, you will probably have difficulty in opening up your heart and feeling good about nurturing on into your family setup that you go on to achieve later. If you're a female and you've not had the yang or the masculine input, then you don't know how to stamp your way into life out there in the world and be successful in what you want to be successful in and to be proud of yourself doing it. You'll have doubts, self-doubts. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. Thank you for that.
That's what this dependency and codependency is all about. And it's all, again, control dramas, power struggles. And it's how you feel about yourself and your completeness and how, therefore, you see yourself as valuable in the world and valuable in the community and in the family.
I guess I must be right in thinking this knowledge that you're sharing in terms of the dynamic of a codependent relationship is going to help greatly when you have clients that come and see you and they're having relationship problems.
Very much so. As people are discussing their stories with me, these codependencies or these lack of feeling valuable show up very, very quickly. I think that some people think that I'm looking at them with psychic ability.
I'm
afraid so, yeah. which really has to be done to enable a journey in a better direction, shall we say. But knowing these wisdoms and having, I'm going to hold my hand up here, having gone through these experiences myself very painfully for long years, and then going through the transformations over long years fairly painfully, and I feel to a greater extent come out the other side, knowing who I am, knowing where my value is, understanding when I have moments of self-doubt, and I know exactly where that's come from. I forgive myself for those times of doubts. I forgive myself for those times of not being able to nurture as well. I've gone through all of that. But because of all of that, I'm now able to hear people's stories and the recognition of where the lacking is. Then they can be very productively helped forward in their lives. It isn't psychic ability, I have to say. It literally is recognition of having to learn, having gone through the awfulness as yourself, and then learnt the knowledge and then put the knowledge into practice.
That always makes for the best teachers.
Well, it does, yeah. But this is the whole point of other people out there learning. The point of the Celestine Prophecies being out there, so everybody can go through these processes.
That's why we're sharing in this.
Pass it on to the rest of the generations.
That's why I'm sharing it in this bite-sized form.
Absolutely. Hoping that people get something out of it because we believe it's a valuable teaching.
So I think we'll round things up now. It's been an interesting discussion today on the 7th and 8th insight, which is part 4. Just to let our listeners know that the next instalment of the teaching will be part 5, in which we will discuss the 9th insight, the emerging, which is called the emerging culture. And then we will also touch upon the 10th insight, which is about this. It comes from the book The Secrets of Shambhala.
I have to say that when I really understood the 9th insight, because it's teaching the way forward for society. Mm. But I feel that a lot of society is already going forward now. I believe I can see it. Mm. I might be wrong, but I believe I can see it. But it is fantastic to bring to the listeners what I see, what you see, and see if they can see that there is a going forward in many aspects. Because very often we look at society, especially with all the elections we've been through lately, in a very negative way. No, life's coming to hell and the planet's this and that. But actually, if you can see that there is a whole energy of society going forward in this way, it makes you go, oh yeah, something is happening. Mm. It really is happening. That's good.
Don't get too depressed. You can see that broader context.
Absolutely, you can. Mm. So you live in, you walk forward with faith that it is happening. Mm. So you need to be a part of that so you can help that energy forward. But I have to say to you, when I went on to read Shambhala, I had quite a shock. Because Shambhala for me had some very weird stuff in it.
Now.
I'm not. It was so weird that at that point, I read it quite a few years ago, I was disappointed because I thought, no, can't do that. That's crazy. Mm. But over the years, I've learned more and more and more. And now I can go back to Shambhala and I know exactly what it's talking about and believe in it now.
We have a guest coming up who also has had an interesting experience with regards to the secrets of Shambhala, which we will explain more in the interview.
And this guest is?
Shirley Batty.
Shirley Batty, one and only Shirley Batty, who has direct connection with very advanced beings. Mm. Way, way above dimensions that we know about, who have taught her all about this.
So please refer back to, it should be up on the Podomatic site, the interview, the fascinating interview with Shirley Batty that we did a while back now. So, right, thank you again, everyone, for listening. We do appreciate all your support. And if you have any ideas or any comments you want to make, then please do contact us at our Discerning Consciousness Facebook page. You can message us there in the normal way. So we're signing off now. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Thanks, Anne. That was terrific.